It's time to get chiseled with Rob Hamadani.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Chiseled. And why do we call it Chiseled? Because we're all a work in progress. Hello again, I'm Rob Hamadani. I'm your host. I'm also the author of Better Than You Think and co-author of Next Level Your Life. And that's, in fact, how I met our guest today, Kelly Calabrese from Argyle, Texas. She's been in the coaching industry for 35 years, business, health, and fitness. But she has a great story to tell. It wasn't great at the time. I know it was painful. And we're going to talk a little bit about that, going from grief to joy. And she's going to share a little bit about that and her faith. And then we're going to have a great discussion today. So welcome to the show, Kelly.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. It is a pleasure to be here.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for being here. And I appreciate you taking the time and your willingness to share your story. So, Kelly, can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, well, I'm actually originally also from the East Coast, was born and raised in New York, spent a long time in New Jersey, and was just blessed to be in a beautiful family. And I knew really early on what I wanted to do. When I was 13, I wrote in my journal, I will be an exercise therapist. I just knew I wanted to help people be well. And that came out of a very strong family history of unwell people, diabetes, obesity, cancer, alcoholism, and cigarette smoking. I just looked at all that and went, ooh, I don't want anything to do with that. And I really love when I'm dancing, swimming, cheerleading, softball. I mean, just love that endorphin rush. I'm like, what do people not get about this? This is great. So I was blessed to go on this journey. I did go to school. I got 3 science degrees in physiology and rehabilitation and so on. And I owned and operated health clubs. I managed corporate fitness centers. I was able to speak all over the world and write a few best-selling books and be on major networks and open up fitness programs really internationally. So it was a very blessed career. And that was the first really 14 years that I owned the health clubs. And then I got into doing a lot of things online once my kids were born. And they're now almost 22 and 23. So I've been doing the stay-at-home mom thing way before COVID. And it's just been a really blessed life to be able to serve people and helping them get healthy, but also on the business side to help people know how to run, you know, fitness, health clubs, and so on. And then I did get into other coaching as well.
That's good. Thank you for sharing that. And it's obvious, I think, to our listeners that you're a driven person, correct?
I am. Definitely was that high D on the DISC profile. I'm all about let's take action. Let's get things done. Let's make it happen. Let's, you know, just get out there and live with no regrets. You know, let's make it happen. I've been entrepreneurial my whole life. I've had a number of different businesses and it's, you know, highs and lows, ups and downs, but lots of lessons and lots of fun.
Yeah. So at 13 years old, you said you knew what you wanted to do. And you said it was more of a product of seeing or being around the environment of things you didn't like. At 13 years old, that's pretty early to pick that up. What do you think led to that? Like your ability to become aware of that?
Well, my dad was the oldest living male in his family at 34. They had all died of, you know, heart attacks and alcoholism. And I had this fear, you know, sometimes we do things out of fear that my dad wasn't going to live to see me graduate high school. He wasn't going to live to see me get married, to have kids. And thankfully, he did all of that. He lived till he was 70, probably in large part to my mom, who kept him healthy and alive way longer than he would have. But he did get to see all those things. And so that was a blessing. But I just didn't want any. I mean, even drinking coffee. I've never tasted coffee. I've never had alcohol. I just looked at those things and went, who wants to get up and sit around every morning and sit at the table for an hour drinking a pot of coffee? Like, I just saw that and went, no, it's not what I want to do. Nothing against coffee drinkers. I know that is a big deal. People love their coffee and there are some health benefits, but I'm a morning person. I was like, there's no way I will ever get up and spend an hour sitting at the table drinking a pot of coffee. And my family are amazing entrepreneurs. They had over 10 businesses over the years. They're very successful, hardworking people. But I just was very observant. And I was happy when I was getting up and moving. And I've always been very driven. I have 32 certifications. I'm a constant learner. I'm always enrolled in some class or program or something. I just finished an 8-month discipleship training program and I'll be starting something new. So just always curious and learning. And I don't want to finish a day with any regrets. I watch zero TV, haven't watched TV in over 30 years. And one of the barometers is I just ask myself, am I going to finish my life wishing I did more of TV? Probably not. More coffee sitting? Probably not. More, you know, more scrolling, probably not. So I try not to do those things. I do the things that I enjoy, and being active is something I enjoy. So every day at sunrise, I'm outside walking, and at sunset, I'm riding my bike, with very few exceptions. I want to be outside at sunrise and sunset every day for quiet time, reflection, prayer time, time in nature, chance to see people, animals. I mean, just to get out from under the fluorescent lights and intentionally be in nature every day.
That's awesome. I got to ask one, just one quick question though. Do you even like the smell of coffee?
No. In fact, people will say, hey, can we meet at, you know, name the coffee shop. And I'll go, ooh, can we meet any place but a coffee shop? Because the smell makes me nauseous. It really does. If it's really strong, if there's an outdoor seating, and I can do it, but I can't sit inside a coffee shop.
That's funny, because a lot of people, I hear them say, hey, I love the smell of it, but I can't stand the taste. So they won't drink it, but they love the smell. So I had to ask that.
Yeah, it physically makes me nauseous.
So you're not drinking coffee today. I won't send you a gift of a coffee bag or anything like
that. Not for me, thanks.
So you got all these certifications, you're driven, and you like it. You like that you're active, you have this energy, and you love to be in nature. What drove you to love the nature side? Because I'm a nature guy. My friends call me the nature boy, a couple of my buddies, and I love being in nature too. So what is it about nature that you like?
Yeah, I know some people, I'm not a big believer in, you know, like the zodiac signs or whatever, but Sagittarius, one of the first things it says about people born in that end of November, beginning of December timeframe is we love to be outside. I just do. I have to be outside. And now, you know, I'm older now. I don't want to sit in the sun and destroy my skin, but I could be under an umbrella or have a hat on or you know, a sunscreen or whatever. But I still get outside every day. I am in awe every single day of, you know, I believe God created everything that's out there that's real and alive. And he did it one time. And he went, he just blew that tree and that lake and that fish and that butterfly and that, you know, that bird. And like, it was all created in a moment. And I want to be in awe every single day of, oh my goodness, like he spoke mountain and there was mountain and he spoke, you know, and in every area of the world, it's different. And I want to be grounded in that every single day. I want to touch grass and I want to be under a canopy of trees. And it's just overcoming. And it helps me know there's something so much bigger than me.
Yeah. I love the awe piece. That's one of my favorite words, to be in awe of him, to be in awe of his creation. And whether something as small as a sparrow on a tree or building a nest or something as vast and big as the Grand Canyon or the Milky Way that you can see in the sky and on a clear night, I like to be in awe. And I think that's awesome. Awesome. That you like that, to be in nature and get that peace and tranquility from that. Is that true?
Oh, yes. Yeah, it's definitely, I do prayer walks every day. So it's a time of gratitude, meditation, reflection, being able to receive and hear. We need to get away from the world. It has never moved faster than it is right now. The overstimulation that we receive is incredible. I mean, we get more content in a day than our grandparents got in years, and we're just not wired to take it all in. So you have to set boundaries and intentionally go, you know what? I'm walking away from the technology. I'm walking away from the fluorescent lights, and I'm going to get re-grounded. And so much of the disease out there has to do with stress, overstimulation. Our brains, our bodies, our spirits are not designed to handle. Our souls need a break from it.
Yeah, so it's, I mean, Kelly, you have this great spirit about you, this great energy, and it's like God breathed that into you. There's Kelly, right? So good stuff, right? So, yeah. Hey, I know when we started open up the show here today, we talked about what road we're going to go down, and we talked about going from grief to joy. So I hear and see a lot of joy in you today, and we've had a previous conversation, and you're there, and I don't want to say you weren't always there, but you had to go through some trials and tribulations to be in a better spot that you are today. Was that correct?
I did. Yes. From the struggle comes the strength, you know, from the trial comes the triumph and the testimony. So I was married for 25 years and I thought happily married. Of course, it's never perfect and there's always challenges, but my husband came home one day and said, my commitment to our marriage is zero. And he left and it floored me. My identity was in being his wife and I was a very good wife. And so, he moved out within a month, and I received divorce papers on my birthday. And then 30 days later, we were divorced. And in a moment, he was re-engaged and remarried. And it took me to my knees. It emptied me out. And I have to say, it wasn't because he was this amazing man that was just so incredible. But when I really took over 3 years to do a deep dive and peel back the layers, it was because my identity was in being his wife more than it was in, you know, standing alone in my authentic self, but being God's child. And so I needed that to almost happen. I hate that it happened, but now I can say I'm thankful that he had the courage to leave, because I went through this process to become the person that I am. I will probably always grieve our family of four, but I am this bold, courageous, joy-filled person that I never would have been had I not gone through the darkest depths. And it wasn't only the divorce. Then there was a series of very unreasonable, difficult events that followed it. You know, I moved 4 times. I literally had PTSD where I couldn't function to keep my business going. Both of my kids went prodigal, both of them. They were 16 and 17 at the time. It was a tough age, and they just needed someone to be ugly at and run from or throw darts at. And I didn't know it at the time, but the stronger parent is the one who gets the worst of them when they're hurting, and they were hurting. And so I got the ugly, him being remarried in a moment, just, you know, living on the other side of town. And then there were car accidents and broken bones and broken teeth and dog got sick and horse colic. I mean, it was just like every day was something else. I mean, even just moving 4 times in a year was, and I wasn't moving an apartment. I was in a 6,000 square foot house and big homes. And so it was a lot. I was in a mansion minder program. And so I was basically a pawn between buyers and sellers. So I had no say, and they just kept moving me around to different homes. But anyway, it was a journey that I needed to go on. And one of the things that I learned in that journey was the stages of grief. And even in all of my years of personal development and coaching, I had never heard of this, but I found out about it. I had done all the things I could do. I was going on the retreats. I was speaking to prophets. I had, you know, women's groups at my house every other week and all the things, but when I heard that he was remarried, it was a surprise to all of us. We didn't know. I found out on social media through friends. I hit rock bottom again. It was just another trigger. Like, I thought, like, okay, you know, getting over this, but it just was so quick and unexpected. And a friend of mine said, "Kelly, you're depressed and it's good." I said, "What do you mean? What do you mean depressed is good?" She said, "You're on the upswing of the stages of grief." I go, "What is that?" And so I went and I studied it. And basically, I can walk your listeners through it. It starts with, there's some loss, and we've all had it. For me, it was divorce. It could be the loss of a job, the loss of a parent. It could be anything could happen, but there's some loss. If you're listening, you've experienced it. And there's shock that comes with it. You know, sometimes there's a slow fade that maybe you're in denial, but there's the moment in time where just something happens and it hits you. It hits your physiology and there's shock. And you can't separate the body, mind, and the spirit. They're all connected. So it's hitting your mind, your will, your emotions, everything. And then there's numbness, where you do have that physiological, you can't even feel because you're still in shock. It's this sort of PTSD. Then there's a denial of, wait a minute, this is not happening. This can't happen to me. I was the good girl. I did all the right things. I was the good wife, or, you know, whatever it was. Like, this isn't supposed to be my story. So there's that denial. And we can't skip any of these steps. And they don't necessarily happen in order, but these are the stages. The next one is the emotional outburst. That's where the emotion finally hits you, where even if you're not an emotional person, somehow it's going to come out, where you're just like, you got to get it out because it's in you and it's deep in you and it's stressful. And when you're stressed, whatever's inside you, it'll come out of you. So if it's joy, joy comes out. If it's, you know, whatever else, it's coming up and out. And then there's anger. And you might say, "Kelly, I'm not really an angry person." Well, I was not an angry person either. But anger could be manifested in many different ways. It's not necessarily, you know, beating someone up or rage. But for me, anger was bitterness. Ooh, I was bitter with a capital B, and I thought I earned the right to be. And that was my form of anger. And I carried that for a long, long time because I thought I had the right to wear that badge.
Yeah.
And then fear sets in where you're starting to now think about the future. And that's where the fear is when you start to go, well, hold on a minute. What's this going to look like? I can't even imagine how this might play out. And you start to get afraid. And I'd never had a panic attack in my life. I had not been an anxious person before, but I was. I had physical panic attacks. I ground my teeth down to nothing. I would just wake up in the middle of the night going, rejected, 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 because the person who's left feels rejected. And so that was the fear. I'm always going to be rejected. Of course, God was not rejecting me, but I couldn't see it in that moment. Eventually you get to a place of searching where you're got to go, oh, all right, let me get a little grip here. What could this start to look like? Well, let me start to piece this back together. And you start to look at what could be, how you could possibly land. Then there's disorganization because once you start searching, then it starts to get a little chaotic. Like, okay, I'm moving this piece, but now this is attached to this and that. And so chaos comes in, and at any new beginning, there's going to be chaos, whether you're starting a business or a relationship or just trying to land again. Then panic sets in again, you know, where it's like, okay, what am I doing? Am I making the right move or not? Then there's guilt, and guilt just, you know, kind of hits you like, okay, what was my part in this? How did I maybe make this happen? And am I making the right decisions? And how is this impacting other people? How is this affecting other moving parts? Am I being selfish? So that comes into it. Then there's loneliness. And the loneliness, you know, all of these things could have either side of the ditch to it. Some loneliness is good, and we need loneliness. We need to get away and be alone. We need to be separated. We need to get alone with God. And it's important that we do, but not to the point of isolation where you're so separated that you're not allowing people in, you're spending too much time alone, you're not having community, you're not receiving help. But you just feel alone. You feel like no one else is in the situation. No one has walked a mile in my shoes. And you just feel like you don't fit. There's just this unknown. And that's where the loneliness comes in. And that goes with some isolation. And some isolation is good. Some guilt is good. Some fear is good. It's when you take it to an extreme or you get stuck or stopped in any of these things that it becomes dangerous. So after the loneliness and isolation, then depression hits. And depression, really, you're pressing things down. And this is when you're pressing feelings down and you're not letting them out. You're not letting them up. You're not letting them, you know, just be out there in the world so that you can hear them yourself. And when you hear things, sometimes you're like, well, that makes sense, or that doesn't make sense, or, oh, I got my answer. Pushing everything down and you're just playing it over and over and over and over. You're not renewing your mind to the new things. But eventually you re-enter. And as you're re-entering, there's still going to be some trouble. I mean, in the world, you're going to have trouble. So we just are. But then eventually you'll have a new strength that you didn't have before. You'll have a new relationship. Even if it's not another spouse, there'll be a friendship. There'll be a partnership. There'll be something new. Someone will come alongside you. You'll have a new pattern. So you'll change the old habits. You'll have new hope. You'll start to get some affirmation in that, like, okay, this is good. I got up and I didn't cry today, or I got up and now I'm going to the gym again, or, you know, I added something new and I'm reading a book. You're getting some feedback from yourself and from the world that I'm going to be okay. And then eventually you adjust and you come out on the other side. And the highest form of getting through the grief is when you start helping others in the area that you had lost. And we see that a lot. You know, we'll see someone who, I have a friend who got pregnant when she was a teenager. Well, she's got a whole ministry for pregnant teens because she knows what that's like. You'll see people recover from pornography or whatever, and they will go help in that area. So I did get certified as a divorce care coach and a mental health care coach, and I created a program for it called Intentionally Fabulous. I have a Facebook group. I teach it at the church. And so I really felt called to help walk, especially women, but I also work with men, walk them out of this grief and then to rebuild and get to a place of joy again. Because when people told me, oh, you'll be happy one day, you'll be glad he left, you're going to be thanking him, I was like, no, I'm not. I mean, you're just being me. Like, I couldn't see it when I was in it. But now on the other side, I can see it and give hope to the ones who are in it and do it in an empathetic way.
Wow, that was fabulous going through all those stages there and helping people out. And, you know, we'll get to maybe how you can help other people later. But, you know, it's there's so much here I can unpack. One of the last things you said is you finally got to the place of joy when you or come out of it, when you were able to help others. And the whole Zig Ziglar saying you get, once you help enough people get what they want in life, you always get what you want in life. And if that's joy that is the answer, then you're getting it now from helping people. So I have a couple questions for you. You talked about anger and bitterness with the capital B, right? So was it anger at yourself, anger at your husband, anger at God, or three?
Yeah, you know, it was interesting because forgiveness is one of the biggest pieces of healing. And in my program, it's the second lesson. Lesson one is identity. Lesson two is forgiveness. I wish I could say that I did it early on, but it was one of the last pieces of my healing. So it was 4th of July weekend, and I realized it was the third 4th of July that I was by myself sitting on my couch. And it wasn't because I didn't have invites to go to the lake and, you know, go people's boats, whatever. But I was committed that I was not going to leave the house until I got through this and was done with this bitterness. And so I sat on the couch one weekend, and I read a book called Forgiving Forward, which someone in our Inner Circle Mastermind had given me a year prior, but I was sitting on my shelf. And I just felt led to read it in that day. And in reading this book called Forgiving Forward by Bill Hybel, I realized that it wasn't forgiving my former husband that was the piece of my bitterness. It wasn't God, but it was myself. Mm-hmm. I felt like such a big failure. And I just felt like a failure. Literally, it was just... That was the release. And it was like something inside me wouldn't allow me to forgive myself, which the forgiveness comes from Jesus. But I realized, okay, well, why did Jesus even come? He came for forgiveness. Okay, so I was rejected by my husband, but nobody was more rejected than Jesus. Jesus took every rejection to the cross, and Jesus isn't rejecting me. So that was really the point where I could physically feel the bitterness leave my body and peace just overcome me because I forgave myself. And it's, you know, really just for me to decide, but the work is already done. I just needed to make a decision.
Did you, and looking back at it now, can you, I guess, determine what it was to say, okay, what was holding you back from forgiving yourself? Do you see that now?
Yeah, I really felt like a failure because I put so much into my marriage. I mean, I was a rock star wife. I'm not kidding you. And it's not to put my husband down, but ex-husband, when I met him, he was recently divorced, recently foreclosed on, recently bankrupt. He owed money to the IRS. He owed money all over town. His business was a broken down limousine. I was 22. He was 33. And for 26 years, I really poured into our marriage to try and make him a better man. And he didn't want it. I was a coach. He didn't want to be coached by his wife. And so I did all the things, you know, hired coaches and, you know, just had this extravagant lifestyle for us. I was the primary breadwinner. He had 26 jobs in 26 years. I mean, those are just the facts. He could not hold a job. And so I had us in a $1 million home and, you know, we had the luxury vacations and the cars and I was focused on a lot of the wrong things. Looking back, I had to own my part, which was I was an enabler and I became a perfectionist and I also became a control freak because you do wind up getting in opposite ends of the ditch. So the more foolish he became, the more controlling and intense I became, the more he was, it is what it is. The kids will do whatever. I was like, they're going to have the best tutors. They're going to get to the best colleges. They're going to, and he was like, not everyone is college material. And I'd be like, oh no, they're good. So I just became someone who wasn't even the real me out of survival. And I'm sure I wasn't a fun person to live with. Who likes to live with a perfectionist? Nobody.
Nobody, right?
So I needed to go through all of that to realize. So I was really holding on to, I was a good wife. This shouldn't happen to me. And I had to let all that go because that, you know, there's only one person who walked the earth who was perfect, and it isn't me.
And it's so, not me.
I needed to just really own my part in it. So that's also when I was able to release the bitterness and just forgive myself. And now you correct those things. Once you're aware of them, now you're responsible to them. So you don't do them anymore to the best of your ability. So I can say I'm a recovered perfectionist. I'm recovered OCD. Am I perfect? No, I like things in order. I probably always will. But I have so much more ease and peace about everything now.
So going through that whole process, did you find yourself going like back and forth from different phases, whether it's anger, emotional outburst, the depression? Did you find yourself like, okay, I got through that, check. But no, you went back to it at some point. Could you see the pool going back and forth?
Yeah, it's not like better. It's like, you're all over. And I did get triggered, and I still get triggered, to be honest. I mean, I will probably always grieve my family of four, but I could say, you know, I'm healed on the other side. But even, I mean, Father's Day just recently passed at the time of this recording. And I do think about, you know, I really hate it that this is the story for my kids, because if you understand the statistics for divorced kids, it's not very good. Their chances of divorce are high. Their chances of suicide are high. Teen pregnancy are high. Crime is high. I mean, you can just go down the list, not getting educated, not having as good a job. I mean, the statistics are just terrible for divorced kids. So Father's Day rolls around and I'm like, ooh, you know, I just hate this for my kids. Or, you know, Easter, I hate that my son's going to have, you know, breakfast with my former husband and lunch with me and, you know, stuff like that. So you can still get sad and even depressed for a moment, but then you get up faster. You don't fall as long, as deep, as hard, or as fast anymore. You're able to let it just roll off your back and go, okay, next, okay, next. And It's not, none of it's an issue for me anymore. It's just, it's a lot faster. So you have your moment and then you go, okay, I'm up.
Yeah. So it's like, I tell people, like, you can, it's okay to have that, we'll call it a pity party. You just can't stay there. Right.
Right.
Dip your toe in the water, but make sure you don't get the whole body in and stay there too long. Right.
That's right. Yeah.
So that's good. So then the other thing you mentioned, you talked about loneliness and isolation. And you said both are good, but too much of either one's bad. Because I think sometimes I need to have my alone time, but sometimes you sit there and say, man, I'm lonely. Or they say it's lonely at the top, right? So when you have that loneliness or that, when you see yourself going that down that isolation road, do you know where that line is where it says, okay, that's enough, I'm out? Or I need a little bit of isolation. Let me push it this far. But if I go too far, I'm going to go too deep. Do you know where that line is?
Yeah, it can be tricky. So I do still spend a lot of time alone, but I feel like God still has me in a very still season. And there are seasons where he separates you to be still with him intentionally. And in that time, he's separating you. He's separating the wheat from the chaff. He is taking some people out of your life. He's getting you more connected. He's preparing you for your next assignment. Sometimes where you're going isn't yet ready. So you need that time alone to press in and to hear. But it doesn't mean you don't have community. It doesn't mean that you're not gonna have friends, or it doesn't mean you don't go to work, or it doesn't mean just sit home. But you have to really have some balance between what is bringing me joy. So a mutual friend also in our inner circle about a year ago reached out for me. She had lost her husband and it had been about 8 months. And she said, I'm tired of crying. I got to stop this. I need to have fun. I have gone to the grief groups. It is too heavy. It is too dark. And she had a 35-year amazing marriage and she missed it. So there was a difference between the divorce and being a widow, where she had something great that she missed and she wanted to have fun again. So we started this singles group, not a dating group, but just people in the DFW area who like to be active. And the common denominator is we are all people of faith. And we just started, hey, let's meet at the lake. Let's go to the movies. Who wants to go dancing, bowling, you know, concerts? Fast forward a few months later, 2,000 people are in our group. We have hundreds of people show up. We did Friendsgiving at a ranch with hundreds of people. We did an epic New Year's Eve party. We rented out a community center. People come up to us at every single event, and about 10% at every event, it's their first time. And they thank us and they say, we needed this. You know, we love church and we love work and we love, you know, all the things, but we needed someone to to pull us out. And it was like we grab people by the collar and just go, come on out and you'll find something you'll like in the group. And if you don't, post something and invite someone. You know, you want to go do bungee jumping, or we go to the shooting range, or I mean, anything is game for the most part. We do non-alcohol events, but go pick something and let's go do it. Let's go have, we rent out the entire campsite and we'll fill every cabin, and we'll fill movie theaters, multiple movie theaters. We fill restaurants and we just have a good time. And there's a group that does life together. Now, we had one wedding, we've got one engagement. We've got a few people have been dating for a few months. And if that happens, we love it, but that's not what this group is about. And that's what makes it great and takes all the pretense away, because you just show up and you have a good time.
That's incredible. I appreciate you sharing that. It's like you got all this energy about you and uplifting. How can somebody not want to be around Kelly, right? Good stuff. So question for you. So you're this faith-filled person, right? You're a God-fearing person and whatnot. And were you always like that? Or was there a time when you said, you know what, I'm all in now?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, I grew up Catholic, Italian, New York. It's kind of the culture a lot of times determines your faith. And when we moved to Texas 17 years ago, the buckle of the Bible Belt, you know, just tried out a few other churches as we were invited. And I felt like my heart melted. And I felt like for the first time, I really felt the presence of God and really heard him. And went on this deep journey. And if the church was open, I was there. I was at every conference. I went to all the Bible studies, multiple Bible studies. I went to the, you know, retreats and the Kairos and the prayer training. I mean, sign me up. If the church was open, had something, I worship committee, I don't even sing. Sign me up. I'll learn something. I mean, I just kept going and just really fell madly in love with God. And I started trusting him. And in the season of the craziness, my scripture for that season was be anxious for nothing, but in all things with prayer, supplication, and thanksgiving, cast your cares upon God. And my life scripture became trust God and lean not on your own understanding. In all your ways, submit to him and he will direct your path. So be anxious for nothing, trust God. Be anxious for nothing, trust God. And I just, throughout my day, that's two of the things that I stand on, and it just gives you this peace that really does surpass all understanding, and you don't get anxious, and God is trustworthy. So my faith, I feel like it's only just beginning. It grows deeper every single day.
Wow, that's powerful. That's very powerful. So you said madly in love with God. I don't know. I can ask you, okay, what is that like? Because you kind of talked about that, but what is it like to be madly in love with God?
You know, well, there's different kinds of love. So God's love is an agape love. That's the word that he uses for it. And it's an unconditional, non-judgmental love that he created me with a purpose. He knows me. He went ahead of me. He designed me. And he knows every hair on my head. And he cares about every hair on my head. And he has good plans for me. So everyone's greatest desire, anyone who has breath, is to be unconditionally loved. No human or groups of humans combined are going to be able to give me that. Now, have those friends. Have friends that make you laugh. Have friends that give you good advice. You know, have smart friends, all those things. That's great. All of different friends will feed different parts of your soul, but they're all going to disappoint you at some point. They're all going to fall short, not intentionally, but that's just how they are. If you're putting your faith in people, you're going to be chronically disappointed and your expectations will never be met. But God will never disappoint you. He will never leave you. He will never forsake you. He's faithful and he's trustworthy. So when you have that kind of trusted relationship with him, you don't rely on people, and you can have joy when you're with other people because you know, okay, well, I'm going to enjoy whatever this is and I'm not going to be disappointed by it because I've got God, and I know that everything here is really temporary anyway, and everything that I do is for eternity.
Wow, man, it is such a joy to just to listen to you here. So when you get up every morning, is there a fire burning in your belly?
There is. You know, I am pretty routine. So I don't get out of bed until I do gratitude. And I, on my drive to the gym, you know, same thing, just praying the day up. I speak life all day long. So I'm just speaking life over my kids, over my clients, over situations. I'm always speaking the best possible outcomes, the best good that can happen. I always have a prayer list that's really long. So when I come in from the gym, I do my prayer walk around the lake, and that gives me peace, but also fired up too. So I'm ready all the time. I want to be discipled up. So I'm on the edge of my seat so that when I'm called, my life's in order. I'm healthy. My house is in order. My money's in order. My kids are, you know, now they're adults. So they're doing their journey and their life, and they're, you know, I've done the best I can with them up to this point. I'm a mentor now. I'm not as much mom. And so if I get called to something, I want to be able to say yes. So I don't want to go, hold on, my health is a mess. Let me have a few doctor's appointments. Or wait a minute, my house is falling apart. Let me get some repair guys. Or my money's not in order. Or my car's not paid for. Or no, I just want to have as much things in order as possible. And this way, when the hard things do happen, which they will, it's just a blip on my radar. Nothing is major because I've got friends, I've got money, I've got resources, I've got, you know, stuff's in order. So life is just a lot better that way. And that humbles me, but I also feel battle tested, equipped. And Kelly means warrior. So I'm just ready. I just want to be ready all the time. I've had a long time of rest. And so I feel equipped and ready for whatever the next thing is. And until then, I get up every day and I go, Jesus, what do you want me to do for you today? You know, my questions have changed. When I was in the depths of despair, it was, why me? How did this happen? You know, you're asking bad questions, you're getting bad answers. And then it finally shifted to, okay, God, what are we doing today? And now it's like, Jesus, what can I do for you? What can I do for you today? And you'll get some cool answers when you ask those questions. And a lot of times I'm really surprised because he just wants me to have fun right now. And that was lacking in my life. And that's where I really did have to build that joy muscle because it wasn't familiar to me. I was really intense, hard driving, and I didn't give myself permission to have joy, even though it was buried inside me. And now I do. And it's really what God wants for me in this season, which is a lot of fun to build that muscle for the first time at, you know, in my early 50s.
Wow, that's great. And then I got to ask this question, and we talked about this briefly before we wrap up here, is you talked about joy. You said it several times. Is people sometimes use the words joy and happiness in the same sentence, like they're synonymous? Would you say they are synonymous or they're different? And what is the difference between the two?
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely crossover. Joy comes from God. That's a fruit of the Spirit. So that's, you know, love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, you know, all that, gentleness, self-control. So it really comes from God. The joy comes from the Lord. Joy comes in the morning. And it's, if God is living inside you, then the joy is inside you. Happiness depends for a lot of people more on their circumstances. So they're happy when they get the job. They're happy when they get the girl. They're happy when, you know. So if your circumstances are dependent on your happiness, then you're not going to have joy.
Joy, right.
So it's definitely different. And there are lots of studies on people who are happy and do those things like sleep well, tell the truth, don't be a liar. People have sex more, happier. Those are statistics. They exercise. They have close, trusted relationships. 75,000 is about the income barrier where people make more, their happiness doesn't really change. But if they get to 75,000, they're, you know, among the happiness. They have close friends geographically. Also, people who are happy, they have purpose in their life. They get to the place where their purpose, their passion, and their profit overlap, and they hit that sweet spot. They do things they love. I mean, there's lots of studies on happiness. There's books written on it. So you can do all those things, you know, be generous. That's all great, but it's still different than joy.
Awesome. Great answer. I love that. So as we wrap up here, Kelly, how much more chiseling do you got going on in your life? What else is God going to chisel you down to? Or
oh my goodness. I'm only just beginning. I feel like I'll be 54 before the year ends. And I feel like I'm just starting. You know, even in my relationship with my kids now at almost 22 and 23, like this, we get to know each other as adults and I get to champion their journey and be their cheerleader and, you know, just evangelize what they're doing, but, you know, not being in any control or helicopter mom or anything like that. So that's being chiseled, you know, right now. And of course I don't see them as much. They're on their own. And so you treasure every day that you're with them. And so So there's chiseling that's happening there. I'm not dating yet. It's been over 5 years, but I believe I will. And God's really preparing my heart for that. So there's a lot of chiseling happening there. So that's been interesting and I'm not anxious about it, but I'm just kind of letting it happen. I believe I'll be married again one day. So God's working on my heart. Even professionally, I've had so much prophetically spoken over me about the platform that I will have to speak and, just have big microphones in my face and me traveling around and equipping and discipling and giving people hope. So I'm faithful with a little, and I believe that chiseling is happening. You know, even being on this podcast, which is awesome. I'm so, so thankful. This is all part of being faithful with some. Be faithful with what you're given. And so complete chiseling going on. Yes. Even beautiful. Physically. I mean, I work out every day. I'm in good shape, but there's always another level to everything.
Yes, there is. That's beautiful. You're an amazing person. And I'd be remiss if I didn't thank Kyle Wilson for introducing us. Kyle Wilson, 18-year business partner, Jim Rohn. And we met each other at one of Kyle's events. And he has this inner circle group that we're a part of. And there's some amazing people in that as well. So that's a good thing. And I'm grateful to Kyle for that. So before we let you go, if somebody wanted to get a hold of you, how can they get a hold of you? And I think you told me you had a little bit of a giveaway here today, too.
I do. Yeah, I love to get people's emails. I honestly answer every single one. So people can email me. It's Kelly with an I, K-E-L-L-I, at Kelly Calabrese, C-A-L-A-B-R-E-S-E.com. So that's my email. That's also my website. It's Facebook. It's LinkedIn, all the places. So you can find me there. And my latest best-selling book is Success Habits of Super Achievers. And so I have an electronic copy of this that you can get. And this basically tells the story of over 80 people who are just average people like you and I that had something unreasonably difficult happen to that overcame it. And not only did they overcome it, but they chose to do something great with it. And they share those success habits in the stories in the book. And so if they go to kellycalabrese.com, they can get the electronic copy.
That is awesome. Thank you for sharing that. You're an amazing person, high energy, faithful, joyful. And I am so honored to have had you on this show today. Thank you for being a part of it. And everybody, till next time, let's go get chiseled.
Thank you.
You just got chiseled with Rob Pomodoro. Be sure to like this podcast, share it with your friends, and subscribe so you don't miss any episodes. Also, you can find Rob's book on Amazon, Better Than You Think.